Welcome to the Brothers Karamazov and Friends, an audiobook disguised as a podcast. Each week we explore the endless pile of pages that comprise the greatest novel of all time, The Brothers Karamazov. We have three rules on TBKAF, and only three. Rule number one, there are no redos. Rule number two, you will receive no help with pronunciation. And rule number three, you have to do voices for the characters. All of them. We will read each week for exactly 1 hour and pick up the next week where we left off. This week we are joined by the artist formerly known as Laura Hendrickson, but now known to those close to her as Laura Malcolm. Laura is a teacher of music, an expert in mid-19th century Russian literature, and a real pal. She is also a professional recorder player. Welcome to the Brothers Karamazov and Friends, Laura.
Good to be here.
That was some very beautiful recorder playing that you graced us with a minute ago.
Thank you.
Where did you learn to play the recorder in such a beautiful fashion?
I learned when I was in elementary school, and then I learned more as a teacher.
When in elementary school?
When I was in, like, fifth grade.
That sounds awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
It has served you well.
Thank you.
You play an excellent recorder, if I do say so myself, and I am a bit of a recorder aficionado.
Okay.
So, that's a real compliment.
Thank you.
From me.
Phil, really appreciate that.
You're welcome. For those of you who may not know, Laura and I were recently joined in Wedded Bliss, and we were serenaded by a choir of 100 recorders at the ceremony.
That's not true.
On to the reading. As you know, every week we switch off paragraphs, we read for exactly 1 hour, and you read first. I don't need to remind you of the rules, because I already reminded you of them earlier. So I'm going to go ahead and start my timer, and you can start the reading now.
Why not talk? Let other people talk, too. You mean, if you're bored, no one should talk?
Grushenka roused herself again, apparently provoking him on purpose. For the first time, as it were, something flashed through Mattia's mind. This time, the Pan replied with obvious irritation.
Pani, I do not contradict. I do not say anything.
All right, then. And you go on with your story, Grushenka cried to Maximov. Why are you all silent?
But there's really nothing to tell because it's all foolishness,
Maximov picked up at once with obvious displeasure, mincing a bit.
And in Gogol, it's all just allegorical because he made all the names allegorical. Nozdryov really wasn't Nozdryov, but Nozov. And Kushnikov doesn't bear any resemblance because he was Shkvernayev. And Fanardi was indeed Fanardi, only he wasn't an Italian, but a Russian. Petrov, sirs, and Mamselle Fanardi was a pretty one, with pretty legs and tights, sirs, a short little skirt all over sequins, and she made pirouettes. Only not for 4 hours, but just for 4 minutes, sirs, and seduced everyone.
What were you thrashed for? What did they thrash you for?
Kolognov kept on shouting.
For Puron, sir,
Maximov replied.
What Puron?
Cried Mitra.
The famous French writer Piron, sirs. We were all drinking wine then, a big company, in a tavern, at that fair. They invited me, and first of all, I started reciting epigrams. Is it you, Barlou, in that furbelow? And Boileau answers that he's going to a masquerade, meaning to the bathhouse, sirs. So they took it personally. Then I hastened to tell them another one, very well known to all educated people, a sarcastic one, sirs. Your Sappho, I'm found, agreed, but there's one thing still troubling me. You don't know your way to the sea. And that, They got even more offended and began scolding me indecently, and I, unfortunately, tried to make things better by telling them a very educated anecdote about Piron, how he wasn't accepted into the French Academy, and in revenge wrote his own epitaph for his gravestone. C'est Piron qui ne fut rien, pas même académicien. Then they shut up and thrashed me.
But what for? What for?
For my education. A man can be thrashed for all sorts of reasons, Maximov summed up meekly and sententiously.
Enough. It's all bad. I don't want to listen. I thought there would be some fun in it.
Grishenka suddenly cut them off. Mitya, thrown into a flutter, stopped laughing at once. The tall pan rose to his feet, and with the haughty look of a man bored by company unsuited to him, began pacing from one corner to the other, holding his hands behind his back.
Look at him pacing!
Grushenka glanced at him contemptuously. Mitya began to worry. Besides, he noticed that the pan on the sofa kept glancing at him irritably.
Pan! Mitya cried. Let us drink Pani! And the other pan, too! Let us drink Panawi! In a second,
he moved three glasses together and poured champagne.
To Poland! Panoli! I drink to your Poland! To the Polish land! Mitya exclaimed.
Sorry.
I believe this part is in Russian?
Yes, sounds like it. So. Mm.
Pardoz mi tu milo pani vipayem.
That is very nice, Pani. Let us drink. The pan of the sofa said gravely and benevolently, taking his glass.
Oh, it's Polish.
Oh.
Duh.
And the other pan, what's his name? Hey, Excellency, take a glass, Mitya fussed.
Pan Vubrevsky, the pan on the sofa prompted.
Pan Vrublevsky came swinging up to the table and, standing, accepted his glass.
To Poland! Pawawi! Hurrah!
Mitya shouted, raising his glass.
All three men drank. Mitya seized the bottle and immediately poured three more glasses.
Now to Russia!
Panawi!
Let us be brothers!
Pour some for us, said Grushenka. I'll drink to Russia too.
So will I, said Galaganov.
I wouldn't mind either, sirs. To our dear Russia, our old granny,
Maximov joined in, giggling.
Everyone, cried Mitya. Innkeeper, more bottles.
The three remaining bottles that Mitya had brought were produced. Mitya poured.
To Russia, hurrah, he proclaimed again. Everyone drank, except the pan. And Grushenka finished her glass at one gulp. The Panawi did not even touch theirs.
So I have to confess that I have not looked over what we read months ago, the last time we read. So I am so confused. I know that Grushenka and Mitya and Maximov and Kalganov and some other guy are in a bar, I think, or somewhere.
So.
and they're drinking. But that could be like quite a bit of this book, to be fair. So who knows where we're at? Let's see. Where is this where I am? Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? What about you, Panawi? Mitya exclaimed. Is that how you are?
Pan Vrublevsky took his glass, raised it, and pronounced in a booming voice.
To Russia within her borders since 1772.
Oto bardos pienki.
Now that's better, shouted the other pan, and they both drained their glasses.
I kind of want to drain my glass right now.
Okay, so.
I don't have any vodka, but I do have this beer.
Sam Adams Winter Ale.
You're both fools. Panawi suddenly escaped from Mitya.
Pa-ni! Both pans shouted threateningly, turning on Mitya like fighting cocks. Pan Vrublevsky especially was boiling.
Oh. Ole ni mozno ni miets,
Slabasti do svojego kraju. Can a man not love his own land? He proclaimed.
Silence!
Oh. Silence! No quarreling! There are to be no quarrels! Grishenka cried, commandingly, and stamped her foot on the floor. Her face was flushed, her eyes gleaming. The glass she had just drunk was telling on her. Mitya got terribly frightened.
Panowy, forgive me. It wasn't my fault. I'll stop. Rublevsky, Pan Rublevsky, I'll stop.
You keep quiet. At least sit down, you silly man. Grishenka snarled at him with spiteful vexation.
They all sat down. They all fell silent. They all looked at one another.
Gentlemen, I am the cause of everything,
Mitya began again, grasping nothing from Grishenka's exclamation.
Why are we all sitting here? What shall we do for some fun? For some more fun?
Oh, it really isn't terribly much fun,
Kalganov mumbled lazily.
Why not a little game of baccarat, like before, sirs?
Maxov suddenly tittered.
Baccarat? Splendid, Mitya picked up. If only the pawns...
Pawns no pawny, the pan on the sofa responded, as though reluctantly.
True,
Pan Vrublevsky agreed.
Puzono? What does puzono mean?
Oh. Asked Grishenka.
It means late, honey. The hour is late,
the pan on the sofa explained.
For them, it's always late. For them, it's always impossible, Grishenka almost shrieked in vexation. They're bored sitting here, so they want everyone else to be bored too. Before you came, Mitya, they just sat here saying nothing, puffing themselves up in front of me.
My goddess, cried the pan on the sofa, it shall be as you say. Vizhenye lashkeye yeshtem shmutni.
I see, you are ill-disposed towards me, and it makes me sad.
Yeshtem gotov.
I am ready. Pani, he concluded, turning to Mitya.
Begin! Begin!
Pani Mitya picked up, snatching his money from the pocket and laying out 200 ruble bills on the table.
I don't know who's saying this. I think it's Mitya.
I want to lose a lot to you, Pan. Take the cards. Make the bank.
What should we get cards from the innkeeper?
The short Pan said gravely and empathetically.
To Najlipsy Smoslub.
It's the best way, Pan Vrublevsky seconded.
From the innkeeper. Very good. I understand. Let them be from the innkeeper. That's fine, Panowy. Cards.
Mitya called to the innkeeper.
The innkeeper brought an unopened deck of cards and announced to Mitya that the girls were already gathering, that the Jews with symbols would probably arrive soon as well, and that the troika with provisions had not arrived yet. Mitya jumped up from the table and ran into the next room to make arrangements at once. But there were only three girls and no Maria yet, and he himself did not know what arrangements to make or why he had run out. He only gave orders for them to take some treats, some candies and toffees from the box, and give them to the girls.
And some vodka for Andrei! Some vodka for Andrei! He added hastily. I offended Andrei!
Here, Maximov, who came running after him, suddenly touched his shoulder.
Give me 5 rubles, he whispered to Mitya. I'd like to chance a little bacar, too.
Wonderful! Splendid! Here, take 10!
He again pulled all the money from his pocket and found 10 rubles.
And if you lose, come again! Come again!
Very well, sir! Maxov whispered joyfully, and he ran back to the room.
Mitya also returned at once and apologized for keeping them waiting. The pans had already sat down and opened the deck. They looked much more amenable, almost friendly. The pan on the sofa lit up a new pipe and prepared to deal. There was even a sort of solemn look on his face.
Take seats, Panowy, Pan Vrublevsky announced.
No, I don't want to play anymore, replied Kalaganov. I've already lost 50 rubles to them.
The pan was unlucky. The pan may be luckier this time,
the pan on the sofa observed in his direction.
How much is the bank? Enough to cover?
Mitya was getting excited.
That depends, Penny. Maybe 100, maybe 2, as much as you want to stake.
1,000,000!
Mitya guffawed.
The pen captain has perhaps heard of Pen Padvysotsky.
What? Padvysotsky?
There is a gaming house in Warsaw, and anyone who comes can stake against the bank. Padvysotsky comes, see 1,000 zloty, and stakes the bank. The banker says, Pani Padvysotsky, you are putting up the money or your honor. My honor, Pani, says Padvysotsky. So much the better, Pani, the banker deals. Padvysotsky wins and reaches for the 1,000 zloty. Here, Pani, says the banker, and he pulls out a drawer and gives him 1,000,000. Take it, Pani, you have won it. There was 1,000,000 in the bank. I didn't know that, says Padvysotsky. Pani Padvysotsky, says the banker, you pledged your honor and we pledged ours. Padvysotsky took the 1,000,000.
That's not true, said Kalganov.
Pani Kalganov, one does not say such a thing in a decent company.
As if a Polish gambler would give away 1,000,000,
Mitya exclaimed, but immediately checked himself.
Forgive me, my Penny, my fault again, of course. He would give it away. On his goner. On his Polish honor. See, well, I speak Polish. Here, 10 rubles on the jack.
I feel like there's some sort of joke there about the word honor and the word G-O-N-O-R, goner. But I don't know enough about Polish to understand. Maybe they say G's all the time instead of H's.
Maybe.
For our dear listeners out there who would like to chime in on this, if you understand the joke that was just made by Mitya, saying he would give it away on his goner, on his Polish honor, perhaps you can enlighten us. Feel free to chime in on Twitter and tell us, hashtag goner.
And I put 1 little ruble on the queen of hearts, the pretty thing, the little Paniachochka, hee.
Maximov giggled, producing the queen, and moving right up to the table as though trying to conceal it from everyone, he hurriedly crossed himself under the table. Mitya won, the ruble also won.
25! Cried Mitya.
Another ruble, a little stake, a simple little stake,
Maximov muttered blissfully, terribly happy to have won a ruble.
Lost! Cried Mitya. Double on the 7!
The double 2 was lost.
Stop! Kalinogov said suddenly.
Double, double! Mitya kept doubling his stakes, and every time he doubled a card, it lost. But the rubles kept winning.
Double!
Mitya roared ferociously.
Do you have any idea what game exactly they're playing?
No.
Me either, okay.
You've lost the 200, Pani. Will you stake another 200?
The pan on the sofa inquired.
What? 200 already?
I'm not good at the whole Russian accent.
No, you're doing great.
Here's another 200! And hold 200 on the double!
And pulling the money away from his pocket, Mitya threw down 200 rubles on the queen, but Kalinogov suddenly covered it with his hand.
Enough! He cried in his ringing voice.
What do you mean?
Mitya stared at him.
Enough! I won't let you! You won't play anymore!
Why?
Because! Just spit and come away, that's why! I won't let you play anymore!
Mitya looked at him in amazement.
Quit, Mitya! Maybe he's right! You've lost a lot as it is,
Grushenka too said with a strange note in her voice. Both pans suddenly rose to their feet, looking terribly offended.
Zartu, yes? Are you joking? Penny, the little pan said, looking sternly at Kalinogov.
Yuck, as in the Powazask, Zurubich Penny!
How dare you do that, Pan Rublevsky also roared at Kalinogov.
Don't you dare shout, Grushenka shouted. You turkey cocks!
Mitya looked at each of them in turn. Then something in Grushenka's face suddenly struck him, and at the same moment something quite new flashed through his mind. A strange new thought.
Penny Agrippina! The little pan, all flushed with defiance, began speaking. Then Mitya suddenly came up to him and slapped him on the shoulder.
A word with you, Excellency!
She's good, she's good, Penny!
What do you want?
Let's step into the other room, over there! I have some nice news for you. The best news. You'll be pleased to hear it.
The little pan was surprised and looked warily at Mitya. However, he agreed at once, but on the firm condition that Pan Pudlevsky also come with them.
The bodyguard? Let him come. We need him too. He must come, in fact, Mitya exclaimed. March, Panowie!
What are you going to do? Grushenka asked anxiously.
We'll be back in a moment, Mitya replied. A certain boldness, a certain unexpected cheerfulness flashed in his face. It was quite a different look from the one he had when he entered the same room an hour earlier. He led the Panawi into the room at the right, not the big one where the chorus of girls was gathering and the table was being laid, but a bedroom where there were trunks and boxes and two big beds with a pile of cotton pillows on each. There was a candle burning on a little wooden table in the very corner. The Pan and Mitya sat down at this table, facing each other, while the enormous Pan Vrublevsky stood to one side of them, his hands behind his back. The Pans looked stern, but were obviously curious.
Sigzme, Mogush, Lesgik,
Panu. What can I do for the Pan? The little Pan prattled.
Here's the water, Pani. I won't waste the words, take this money.
He pulled out his banknotes.
If you want 3,000...
Oh, this is Mitya.
Yeah.
If you want 3,000, take it and go wherever you like.
The Pan acquired a keen look. He was all eyes. He fixed his glaze on Mitya's face.
Teresi, Shashi, Pani.
3,000, Pani? He exchanged glances with Vrublevsky.
Teresi, Pani, Teresi.
Listen, Pani. Pani, I see your...
I see you're a reasonable man. Take 3,000 and go to the devil, and don't forget Vrublevsky. Do you hear? By now, this minute, and forever. Do you understand, Penny? You'll walk out of this door forever. What have you got in there? An overcoat? A fur coat? I'll bring it out to you. The Troika will be harnessed for you this very moment, and goodbye, Penny, eh?
Mitya waited confidently for an answer. He had no doubts. Something extremely resolute flashed in the Pan's face.
And the rubles, Penny?
We'll do it this way, Penny. I'll give you 500 rubles right now for the coachman and as a first installment. And 2,500 will come tomorrow in town. I swear on my honor, I'll dig it up somewhere, Mitya cried.
The Poles exchanged glances again. The Pan's expression took a turn for the worse.
700, not 5 right now. This minute in your hands. Mitya upped his offer, sensing that things were not going well. What's the matter, Pan? You don't believe me? I'm not going to give you all 3,000 at once. I'd give it to you, and you'd go back to her tomorrow. And I don't have the whole 3,000 with me. I have it at home, in town, Mitya babbled weakly, losing heart with each word. By God, I have it hidden.
In an instant, a sense of extraordinary dignity shone on the little Pan's face.
Is there anything else you'd like?
He asked ironically.
Pfui!
Shame on you. And he spat. Pan Vrublevsky also spat.
You'll spit, Penny, because,
Mitya spoke, as one in despair realizing that all was over because
you hope to get more from Grushenka. You're a couple of capons, that's what.
I just remembered what's happening. This is the guy that Grushenka was going to marry,
mm-hmm.
who the Polish officer who was, like, away, and he's just come back, and Mitya is, like, hoping to... to buy him off and get him out of here. It only took us, like, 6 pages, but we remember where we are now.
But we got it.
Nailed it.
Jestem do zhvegi dochnieti.
That is a more formal insult. The little Pan suddenly turned red as a lobster, and briskly, in terrible indignation, as though unwilling to listen any longer, walked out of the room. Vrublevsky went swinging after him, and Mitya, confused and at a loss, followed them out. He was afraid of Grushenka. He anticipated that the Pan would now make an uproar. And that, indeed, is what happened. The Pan walked into the room and stood theatrically before Grushenka.
Penny Agrippina, jestem dziś wolin drunkki. He began explaining, but Grushenka suddenly seemed to lose all patience, as if she had been touched on her sorest spot.
Russian! Speak Russian, not a word of Polish! She shouted at him. You used to speak Russian. Did you forget it in 5 years?
She was all flushed with anger.
Penny Agrippina!
I am Agrippina! I am Grushenka! Speak Russian or I won't listen to you!
The pan was panting with goner, and in broken Russian quickly and pompously declared,
Penny Agrippina! I came to forget the past, to forget it, to forget what has happened until today!
Forgive? You mean you came to forgive me?
Grushenka interrupted and jumped up from her seat.
Just so, Penny. I am not... Whoa. Pusillanimous. I am magnanimous. But I was surprised when I saw your lovers. Penmitya in the other room offered me 3,000 to depart. I spat in the pan's face.
What? He offered you money for me?
Grushenka cried hysterically.
Is it true, Mitya? How dare you? Am I for sale?
Benny, Mitya cried out. She is pure, she is shining, and I have never been her lover. It's a lie.
How dare you defend me to him?
Grushenka went on shouting.
I have been pure not out of virtue, and not from fear of Kuzma, but in order to stand proudly before him, and have the right to call him a scoundrel when I meet him. But did he really not take your money?
He was offering it, Mitya exclaimed. Only he wanted all 3,000 at once, and I offered him just 700 now.
But of course, he heard I had money, so he came to marry me.
Penny Agrippina, cried the pan. I am a knight, a nobleman, not a...
I can only assume that word means scoundrel.
Scoundrel. I arrived to take you for my wife, but I see a new Penny, not as she was before, but wanton and shameless.
I'll go back where you came from! I'll order them to throw you out right now, and they will!
Grushenka cried in a rage.
You okay?
Yeah, it's her voice does some damage to the old throat.
I was a fool to torment myself for 5 years, and I didn't torment myself because of him at all. I tormented myself out of spite, and this isn't him at all. Was he like that? This one's more like his father. Where did you get such a wig? He was a falcon. What? He was a falcon, and this one is a drake. He laughed and sang songs to me, and I have been shedding tears for 5 years, cursed fool that I am, mean, shameless.
She fell onto her armchair and covered her face with her hands. At that moment, the chorus of Mokoryo girls finally assembled in the next room, to the left, suddenly burst into a rollicking dance song.
This is a sodom, Pan Vrublevsky suddenly bellowed. Innkeeper, throw these shameless people out!
The innkeeper, who had been peeking curiously through the door for a long time already, hearing shouts and seeing that his guests were quarreling, came into the room at once.
What are you yelling about? Shut your trap!
Oh. He addressed Vrublevsky with a sort of discourtesy that was even impossible to explain.
Swine! Roared Pan Vrublevsky.
Swine, am I? And what sort of cards have you just been playing with? I gave you a deck and you heed it. You were playing with marked cards. I can bug you up to Siberia for marked cards. Do you know that? It's the same as bad money.
And going over to the sofa, he put his fingers between the cushion and the back and pulled out an unopened deck of cards.
Here's my deck, unopened! He held it up and showed it all around. From there, I saw him shove my deck behind the cushion and put his own in place of it. You're not a pen, you're a cheat!
So, Pan Vrublevsky has been cheating in this game of
double ruble cards, or whatever their phase 10 or whatever it is they're playing.
I think it might just be Uno.
That's probably it.
And I saw the other pen palm my card twice, cried Kalganov.
Ah, what a shame! What a shame!
Exclaimed Grushenka, clasping her hands and genuinely blushing with shame. Lord, what he's come to!
And I thought so too, shouted Mitya, but he had barely spoken when Pan Vrublevsky, embarrassed and infuriated, turned to Grushenka and, shaking his fist at her, shouted,
Public slut! But he had barely exclaimed it when Mitya flew at him, seized him with both hands, lifted him up in the air, and in an instant carried him out of the room into the bedroom on the right, the one where he had just taken two pans.
I left him there on the floor, he announced, returning at once, breathless with excitement. He's struggling, the scum, but there's no chance he'll get out.
He closed one half of the door, and holding the other wide open, he called out to the little pan.
Excellency, would you care to follow him, if you please?
This is a new person. maybe.
Mitri Fyodorovich, my dear,
exclaimed Trifon Borisich.
Take back the money you lost to them. It's the same as if they'd stolen it from you.
I don't want my 50 rubles back, Vlognov suddenly answered.
And I don't want my 200, exclaimed Mitya. Not for anything will I take it back. Let him keep it as a consolation.
Bravo, Mitya. Well done,
cried Grushenka. A terribly malice note rang in her exclamation. The little pan, purple with fury, yet by no means losing his stateliness, stared at the door, but stopped and suddenly said, addressing Grushenka,
Let me easily judge each zamya. It's my Yezli near, Vilay of Zutrawa.
Pani, if you want to come with me, come. If not, farewell.
And pompously, puffing with ambition and indignation, he went through the door. The man had character, after all. That had taken place. He did not lose hope that the Pani would follow him after him. So highly did he value himself. Mitya slammed the door behind him.
Lock it with a key,
said Kalganov, but the lock clicked from the other side. They had locked themselves in.
Bravo!
Grushenka cried again, mercilessly and malicely. Bravo, and good riddance!
Chapter 8. Delirium. What began then was almost an orgy. A feast of feasts. I'm curious as to what something is if it is almost an orgy. Apparently, something that is almost an orgy is just a feast of feasts.
I think it's when, like, there's a lot of people, and they're kind of, like, into each other, but...
It's like they're all thinking about having sex with each other.
Yeah, and, like, just a lot of pawing.
There's just a whole...
A lot of pawing and petting.
There's a lot of petting going on. That sounds about right.
A feast of
feasts. Grushenka was the first to call for wine.
I want to drink! I want to get quite drunk like before! Remember, Mitya? Remember how we were coming to know each other then?
Mitya himself was as if in delirium, anticipating his happiness. Grushenka, incidentally, kept chasing him away from her all the while.
Go! Enjoy yourself! Tell them to dance! Everyone should enjoy themselves! Sing Dance Cottage Dance Stove like before, she kept exclaiming.
She was terribly excited. And Mitya would run to give orders. The chorus gathered in the next room. The room they had been sitting in so far was small in any case. It was divided in two by a cotton curtain, behind which, again, there was an enormous bed with a plump down mattress and a pile of the same sort of cotton pillows. Indeed, in all four good rooms of the house, there were beds everywhere. Grushenka settled herself just by the door. Mitya brought her an armchair. She had sat in the same place then, on the day of their first spree, and from there had watched the chorus and the dancing. The girls who gathered were the same as then. The Jews with fiddlers and zithers arrived, and finally the long-awaited troika arrived with its cart full of wines and provisions. Mitya bustled about. Uninvited guests came to watch, peasant men and women who had already gone to sleep but woke up sensing an unheard-of entertainment, like that of a month before. Mitya greeted and embraced those he knew, recalling their faces. He uncorked bottles and poured them all comers. Champagne was popular only with the girls. The men preferred rum and cognac, and especially hot punch. Midya ordered hot chocolate for all the girls, and 3 samovars to be kept boiling all night so that everyone who came could have tea or punch. Whoever wants to can help himself. In a word, something disorderly and absurd began. But Mitya was in his natural element, as it were, and the more absurd it all became, the more his spirits rose. If some peasant had asked him for money at that moment, he would at once have pulled out his whole wad and started giving it away right and left without counting. That is probably why, in order to protect Mitya, the innkeeper Trifon Borisich, who seemed to have quite given up any thought of going to sleep that night, and who nevertheless drank little, he only had 1 glass of punch, was almost constantly scurrying around him, vigilantly looking out in his own way for Mitya's interest. When necessary, he intervened in a friendly and servile manner, reasoning with him, not letting him, as he had then, present the peasants with cigarettes and Rhine wine, or, God forbid, with money, and was highly indignant that the girls were drinking liquor and eating candy.
"There's nothing but lice there, Dmitri Fyodorovich," he would say. "I'd give them a knee in the backside, every one of them, and tell them to count it an honor. That's what they're like."
Mitya again remembered Andrei and ordered punch to be sent out to him. "I offended him before," he kept saying in a weak and tender voice. Kalganov did not want to drink at first, and very much disliked the girl's chorus, but after drinking 2 more glasses of champagne, he became terribly happy. Faced about the rooms, laughed, and praised everyone and everything, songs and music. Maximov, blissful and tipsy, never left his side. Grushenka, who was also beginning to get drunk, kept pointing at Kalganov and saying to Mitya,
"What a darling he is! What a wonderful boy!"
And Mitya would run in rapture to kiss Kalganov and Maximov. Oh, he was expecting so much. She had not yet said anything to him, but obviously put off saying anything on purpose, and only glanced at him from time to time with caressing but ardent eyes. Finally, she suddenly caught him fast by the hand and pulled him forcefully to herself. She was then sitting in the armchair by the door.
"How have you walked in tonight, eh? How have you walked in? I was so frightened. So you wanted to give up on him, Did you really?"
"I didn't want to ruin your happiness," Mitya prattled blissfully, but she did not even need his answer.
"Now go, enjoy yourself," she chased him away again. "And don't cry, I'll call you back."
He would run off, and she would begin listening to the songs and watching the dancing again, following him with her eyes wherever he went. But after a quarter of an hour, she would call him again, and he would again come running to her.
"Here, sit beside me now. Tell me, how did you hear about me yesterday? That I had come here? Who told you first?"
And Mitya would start telling her everything, incoherently, disconnectedly, feverishly, yet he spoke strangely, often suddenly frowning and breaking off.
"Why are you frowning?" she asked.
"It's nothing. I left a man sick there. I'd give 10 years of my life for him to recover, just to know he'd recover."
"Well, if he's sick, God help him. Were you really going to shoot yourself tomorrow? What a silly man. But why? I love such men, reckless men, like you," she prattled to him with a somewhat heavy tongue. "So you're ready to do anything for me, eh? But were you really going to shoot yourself tomorrow, you little fool? No, wait now. Tomorrow, maybe, I'll have something to tell you. Not today, but tomorrow. And you'd like it to be today? No, today I don't want to. Go now, go. Enjoy yourself."
That's why it's almost an orgy.
Not quite.
Not quite.
Just petting.
Once, however, she called him over with a worried and perplexed look.
"Why are you sad? I can see you're sad. Yes, I see it," he added, peering sharply into his eyes. "Though you're kissing peasants and shouting in there, still I can see something. Now, enjoy yourself. I'm enjoying myself. You enjoy yourself, too. I love someone here. Guess who? Oh, look, my boy fell asleep. He's had too much, the dear."
She was referring to Kalganov, who had indeed had too much, and fell asleep for a moment sitting on the sofa. He fell asleep not only from drink. For some reason, he suddenly felt sad, or bored, as he put it. Towards the end, he was also greatly disheartened by the girls' songs, which, as the drinking party wore on, gradually became rather non-Lenten and licentious. And their dancing, too. 2 girls dressed themselves up as bears. And Stepanida, a pert girl with a stick in her hand, acted as their keeper and began showing them.
Oh.
Faster, Maria! She cried. Or I'll use the stick!
The bears finally rolled on the floor, somehow quite indecently, amid the loud laughter of the closely packed audience of peasants and their women.
Well, let them, Grushenka kept saying sententiously,
with a blissful look on her face.
How often do they have fun like this, so why shouldn't people enjoy themselves?
Kalganov looked as if he had soiled himself with something.
It's all swinishness, all this populism, he observed, drawing aside. It's all spring rebels when they keep watch on the sun through the summer night.
He especially disliked one new song with a perky dance tune, where they sang of how a master rode around searching out the girls.
And all the girls the master sought, would they love him or would they not?
But the girls decided they would not love the master.
For he beat me cruelly, and love like that is not for me.
Then along comes a gypsy.
And all the girls the gypsy thought, would they love him or would they not?
But they would not give their love to the gypsy either.
For he'll turn out to be a thief, and that I'm sure will bring me grief.
Many more people came, come in the same way, searching out the girls, even a soldier.
And all the girls the soldier sought, would they love him or would they not?
But the soldier is rejected with contempt.
The soldier boy will pack his kit and drag me with him through.
There followed a most unprintable rhyme, sung quite openly, which caused a furor in the audience. The matter finally ended with a merchant.
And all the girls the merchant sought, would they love him or would they not?
And it turns out that they will love him very much, because they say,
the merchant who have gold in store, I'll be his queen forevermore.
Kalaganov got angry.
That song is no older than yesterday, he observed aloud. And who is it that writes such things for them? All they need is for a railroad man or a Jew to come seeking the girls. They'd win out over all of them.
And almost offended, he declared then and there that he was bored, sat down on the sofa, and suddenly dozed off. His pretty face turned somewhat pale and fell back on the cushion of the sofa.
Look how pretty he is, Grushenka said, drawing Mitya over to him. I was combing his hair earlier. It's like flax and so thick.
And, leaning over him tenderly, she kissed him on the forehead. Kalganov opened his eyes at once, looked at her, rose a little, and with a most worried look asked,
where is Maximov?
That's who he wants, laughed Grushenka. Just sit with me for a minute, Mitya. Run and fetch this, Maximov.
Maximov, it turned out, now never left the girls, and only ran from time to time to pour himself some liquor, or some chocolate, of which he had had 2 cups. His little face had turned red, his nose was purple, his eyes were moist and sweet. He ran up to them and announced that he was about to dance the Sabotier to a certain...
To a certain little tune.
Oh, bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, this is nice.
You see, I learned all these well-bred society dances when I was a young boy.
Well, go with him, Mitya. I'll watch how he dances from here.
And me too. I'll go and watch too, exclaimed Kalaganov, rejecting in the most naive way Grushenka's offer to sit with him. And they all went to watch. Maximov, indeed, danced his dance, but produced no special admiration in anyone except for Mitya. The whole dance consisted in a sort of hopping and twisting aside of feet, soles up, and with every hop, Maximov slapped the sole of his foot with his hand. Kalaganov did not like it at all, but Mitya even kissed the dancer.
Well, thank you. You're probably tired out. What do you have your eye on? Would you like some candy, eh? How about a cigar?
A cigar, sir.
Would you like a drink?
Some of that liqueur, sir. Are there any chocolates, sir?
There, on the table, a whole pile of them. Take whatever you want, you dear fellow.
No, sir, I'd like one with vanilla. They're for old folks, sir. Hee hee.
No, brother, that's one kind we haven't got.
Listen, the old man suddenly leaned close to Matthew's ear. This girl, Mariushka, could possibly make her acquaintance. Would you be so kind?
So that's what you're after. No, brother, it won't do.
I don't mean any harm, sir, Maximov whispered dejectedly.
All right. They only come here to sing and dance, brother, but still. Ah, the devil. Wait a while. Eat for now. Eat, drink, enjoy yourself. Do you need money?
Maybe later, sir, Maximov smiled.
All right. Mitya's... Sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
Mitya's head was burning. He walked out to the hallway and onto the upper wooden veranda, which ran part way around the inner side of the building overlooking the courtyard. The fresh air revived him. He stood alone in the darkness in a corner and suddenly clutched his head with both hands. His scattered thoughts suddenly came together. His sensations merged. And the result of it was all light, a terrible, awful light.
And if I'm going to shoot myself, what better time than now?
Swept through his mind.
Go, get the pistol, bring it out here, and end everything in this dark and dingy corner.
For almost a minute he stood undecided. Shame lay behind him that evening as he was flying there. The theft he had already committed, carried out, and the blood, that blood! But it had been easier for him than, oh, much easier. Everything had been finished then. He had lost her, given her up. She had died for him, disappeared. Oh, his sentence seemed lighter then. At least it appeared inevitable, necessary. For why should he remain in the world? And now? Was it the same now as them? Now, at least one ghost, one Boogie was out of the way. The former one, the indisputable and fatal man of hers, had vanished without a trace. The terrible ghost had suddenly turned into something so small, so comical. It was carried to the bedroom and locked up. It would never return. She was ashamed, and by her eyes he could now see clearly whom she loved. So now all he had to do was live. But he could not live. He could not. Oh, damnation!
God restore me, who has struck down at the fence. Let this terrible cup pass me. You worked miracles, O Lord, for sinners just like me. And what if the old man is alive? Oh, then I will remove the shame and the remaining disgrace. I will return the stolen money. I will give it back. I'll dig it up somewhere. There will be no trace of shame left, except forever in my heart. But no,
faint-hearted, impossible dreams. Oh.
Oh, damnation!
Yet it was as if a ray of some bright hope shone on him in the darkness. He tore himself away and rushed inside. To her again, his queen forever. Isn't 1 hour, 1 minute of her love worth the rest of my life, even in the torments of disgrace? This wild question seized his heart. To her alone, to see her, to hear her, and not to think of anything. To forget everything, if only for this one night, for 1 hour, for one moment. Still, on the veranda, just at the door, he ran into the innkeeper, Trifon Borisich. He looked gloomy and worried, and seemed to be coming to find him.
What is it, Borish? Are you looking for me?
No, sir, not you, the innkeeper seemed suddenly taken aback. Why should I be looking for you? And you, where were you, sir?
Why are you so glum? Are you angry? Wait a bit. You go to bed soon. What time is it?
It must be 3 by now. Maybe even past 3.
We'll stop.
Don't mention it. It's nothing, sir. As long as you like, sir.
What's with him?
Mitya thought pleadingly, and ran into the room where the girls were dancing, but she was not there. She was not in the blue room either. Only Kalaganov was dozing off on the sofa. Mitya peeked behind the curtain. She was there. She was sitting in the corner, on a chest, her head and arms leaning on the bed beside her, crying bitterly, trying very hard to hold back and stifle her sobs so that no one would hear her. Seeing Mitya, she beckoned to him, and he ran over to her. She caught him firmly by the hand.
Mitya, Mitya, I did love him,
she began in a whisper.
I loved him so, all these 5 years, all this while. Did I love him, or only my spite? No, him, oh, him. It's a lie that I loved only my spite and not him. Mitya, I was just 17 then. He was so tender with me, so merry. He sang me songs. Or did he only seem that way to me, to a foolish girl? And now, Lord, it's not the same man, not him at all. And it's not his face, not his at all. I didn't even recognize his face. I was driving here with Timofey and kept thinking, all the way I kept thinking, how shall I meet him? What shall I say? How shall we look at each other? My soul was frozen, and then it was as if he emptied a bucket of slops on me. He talks like a schoolmaster. It's all so learned, so pompous. He greeted me so pompously I didn't know what to do. I couldn't get a word in. At first I thought he was embarrassed in front of the other one, the tall one. I sat looking at them and thought, why is it I don't know how to speak with him now? You know, it's his wife that did it to him, the one he married then after he dropped me. She's the one that changed him. What shame, Mitya. Oh, I'm ashamed, Mitya. Ashamed, so ashamed for my whole life. Cursed, cursed be those 5 years, cursed!
And again she dissolved in tears, yet without letting go of Mitya's hand, holding on to it firmly.
Mitya, my dear, wait, don't go, I want to tell you something,
she whispered, and suddenly looked up at him.
Listen, tell me whom I love. I love one man here. Who is it? You tell me.
A smile lightened on her face. Swollen with tears, her eyes shone in the semi-darkness.
Tonight a falcon walked in, and my heart sank inside me. You fool! This is the one you love, my heart whispered to me at once. You walked in and brightened everything. What is he afraid of, I thought. And you really were afraid, quite afraid. You couldn't speak. He's not afraid of them. How can he be afraid of anyone? It's me he's afraid of, just me! But then he did tell you, you little fool, how I shouted to Alyosha out the window that I loved Mitenka for 1 hour and am now going off to love another. Mitya, Mitya, how could I be such a fool to think I off to love another?
Oops.
I could love another after you. Do forgive me, Mitya, do forgive me, or not. Do you love me? Do you?
She jumped up and grasped him by the shoulders with both hands. Mute with rapture, Mitya gazed into her eyes, at her face, her smile, and suddenly, embracing her firmly, began kissing her.
Yikes.
Will you forgive me for tormenting you? I tormented all of you from spite. I drove that old man out of his mind on purpose,
just from spite. Do you remember how you once drank at my place and broke the glass? I remembered it, and today I too broke a glass as I drank to my base heart. Mitya, my falcon, why aren't you kissing me? You kissed me once and tore yourself away to look, to listen. Why, listen to me. Kiss me. Kiss me harder, like this. Let's love. If we're going to love, I'll be your slave now, your lifelong slave. It's sweet to be a slave. Kiss me, beat me, torment me, do something to me. Oh, how I deserve to be tormented. Stop! Wait, not now. I don't want it to be like that.
She suddenly pushed him away.
Go, Mitya, I'll drink wine now.
Let it go.
I want to get drunk. I'm going to get drunk and dance. I want to.
She broke away from him and went out through the curtain. Mitya followed after her like a drunk man. Come what may, whatever happens now, I'll give the whole world for 1 minute, flashed through his head. Grushenka indeed drank another glass of champagne at one gulp, and suddenly became very tipsy. She sat in her former place in the armchair with a blissful smile. Her cheeks were glowing, her lips were burning, her bright eyes turned bleary, her passionate gaze beckoned. Even Kalganov felt a stab in his heart and went up to her.
Did you feel how I kissed you while you were sleeping? She babbled to him. I'm drunk now, that's what. And you, are you drunk? And why isn't Mitya drinking? Why aren't you drinking, Mitya? I drank and you're not drinking.
I'm drunk, drunk anyway, drunk with you, and now I'm going to get drunk with wine.
He drank another glass, and he found it strange himself. Only this last glass made him drunk, suddenly drunk, though until then he had been sober, he remembered that. From then on, everything began whirling around him as if in delirium. He walked, laughed, talked with everyone, all oblivious of himself, as it were. Only one fixed and burning feeling made itself known in him every moment. Like a hot coal in my heart, as he recalled afterwards. He would go over to her, sit down by her, look at her, listen to her. And she became terribly talkative, kept calling everyone to her, would suddenly beckon to some girl from the chorus. The girl would come over, and she would sometimes kiss her and let her go, or sometimes make the sign of the cross over her. Another minute, and she would have been in tears. She was also greatly amused by the little old fellow, as she called Maximov. He ran up to her every other minute to kiss her hands and each little finger, and in the end danced one more dance to an old song, which he sang himself. He danced with particular ardor to the refrain. The piggy goes oink, oink, oink. The calfie goes moo, moo, moo. The ducky goes quack, quack, quack. And the goosey goes goo, goo, goo. Then little Henny walks in the door. Cluck, cluck, she says, and cluck once more. Aye, aye, she clucked once more.
Give him something, Mitya, Grushenka said. Give him a present. He's poor. Oh, the poor and insulted. You know, Mitya, I will go into a convent. No, really, some day I will. Alyosha said something to me that I'll never forget. Yes. But today let's dance. Tomorrow the convent, but today we'll dance. I want to be naughty. Good people, what of it? God will forgive. If I were God, I'd forgive all people. My dear sinners, from now on, I forgive you all. And I'll go on, ask for forgiveness. Forgive me, good people. I'm a foolish woman, that's what. I'm a beast, that's what. I want to pray. I gave an onion. Wicked as I am, I want to pray. Mitya, let them dance. Don't interfere. Everyone in the world is good. Every part, every one of them. The world is a good place. We may be bad, but the world is a good place. We're bad and good, both bad and good. No, tell me. Let me ask you. All you come here, and I'll ask you this. And I'll ask you, tell me this, all of you, why am I so good? I am good, I'm very good. Tell me then, why am I so good? Thus, Grushenka babbled on, getting more and more drunk, and finally declared outright that she now wanted to dance herself. She got up from her armchair and staggered. Mitya, don't give me any more wine. Not even if I ask. Wine doesn't bring bees. Everything is spinning, the stove and everything. I want to dance. Let everybody watch how I dance, and how well and wonderfully I dance.
The intention was serious. She took a white cambric handkerchief from her pocket, and held it by one corner in her right hand, to wave while she danced. Minty began bustling. The girls' chorus fell silent, preparing to burst into a dancing song at the first signal. Maximov, learning that Grushenka herself was going to dance, squealed with delight and began hopping in front of her, singing,
Its legs are not, its sides are taut, and its little tail all in a curl.
But Grushenka chased him away with a wave of her handkerchief.
Shoo, Mitya, why aren't they coming? Let everyone come to watch. Call them, too. They were the locked up ones. What did you lock them up for? Tell them I'm dancing. Let them watch me, too.
Mitya swept drunkenly to the locked door and began knocking for the pans with his fist.
Hey, you! Podivskovskis! Come out! She's going to dance! She's calling you!
Lush duck! One of the pans shouted in reply.
And you are Podglavskov, a pretty little Polish scoundrel, that's what you are.
You should stop deriding Poland,
Toganov, who had also drunk more than his fill, remarked sententiously.
Quiet, boy. I will call him a scoundrel if he doesn't mean I'm calling all Poland a scoundrel. One Lashkov doesn't make a Poland. Keep quiet, pretty boy. Eat your candy.
Oh, what people? And if they weren't even, as if they weren't even human beings. Why won't they make peace?
Said Grushenka, and she stepped out to dance. The chorus broke into All Hallway My Hallway My Hallway. Grushenka threw back her head, half opened her lips, smiled, waved the handkerchief, and suddenly, swaying badly, stopped perplexed in the middle of the room.
I feel weak, she said in a sort of exhausted voice. Forgive me. I feel weak. I can't. I'm sorry.
She bowed to the chorus and then began bowing on all sides.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
She's had a drop, the lady. The pretty lady's had a drop, voices were heard saying.
She's drunk, Maximov explained, giggling to the girls.
Mitya, help me. Take me, Mitya,
Grushenka said weakly. Mitya rushed to her, picked her up, and ran behind the curtain with his precious booty.
Well, no, I really shall leave, thought Kalganov, and going out of the blue room, he closed both halves of the door behind him.
But the feast in the main room went thundering on, and thundering all the more. Mitya laid Grushenka on the bed and pressed his lips to hers in a kiss.
Don't touch me, she murmured to him in a pleading voice. Don't touch me. I'm not yours yet. I said I was yours, but don't touch me. Spare me. We mustn't do it with them here in the next room. He's here. It's a vial here.
I obey. I wouldn't dream. I revere, Mitya muttered. Yes, it's vile here. Oh, unspeakably.
And without letting her out of his embrace, he knelt on the floor by the bed.
I know. Though you're a beast, you're still noble, Grushenka spoke with difficulty. You should do it, honestly. From now on, it will be honest. And we should be honest. And we should be good. Not beasts, but good.
Thank you for joining us on the Brothers Karamazov and Friends. Please join us next time for Friendship, Brotherhood, and 3,000 Rubles.